Welcome to the Inner Hole Uprising,
a podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black polyamorous feminist hoe living in New York City, and
me, Rodeca, one fat black pansexual whose life is a series of coincidences that somehow landed her here.
And Akua, one intersectional feminist that specializes in all things mental health and all things hoe.
As I mentioned earlier, my name is Sam. I'm the principal host of this here show. That means that week in and week out, I'm here with one of three rotating co-hos, and this week we have two co-hos.
Oh,
in a week
shit.
That's actually supposed to be with all three, but Rob is away doing military things, but we'll be back for a couple of episodes before they leave for good. And by for good, I mean 10 months.
Yes.
Yeah. You okay? You're cool.
No, it makes me sad.
It makes me sad too. But that's life, man. It sucks.
The time will pass, and then it'll just be
there's not going to be America by the time Rob gets back.
That's the worst part, is that time will pass.
Yeah.
Like, slowly. That is time without Rob.
Wow. That's true.
You got deep. Damn, that was poetic.
That made me feel terrible, so,
That's why I feel sad about it.
Wow, I like that you put it like that, though. It was very romantic, in a sense.
That was beautiful.
I love Rob.
Oh.
My name.
We all love Rob.
All right.
Welcome to season 4 of the Inner Hole Uprising, guys. This season, we have things in store for you. We have a cool Patreon page that allows you to see us as we're recording on video.
You know.
Which is a pretty cool fucking thing.
Tired of saying for that.
Huh? You get to see.
I'm tired of you for that.
Tired of
me
for what?
Got me on video looking all ashy. You know I don't come here looking.
I just walked in. I was like, is that a camera? Goddamn. Yeah, nah. But
so it's like
niggas is about to get their hair done looking crazy as hell.
True. Also, this week we have really cool themed episodes and months and stuff like that. So welcome to Black History Month, folks.
Yes.
Four Black History themed programmed episodes starting with this episode, and it's gonna be pretty fucking good. I'm very excited. If you're a new listener to the show, we have some segments for you. They are
Bay of the Week,
which is where we talk about people who we find attractive.
Hoe of the Week,
where we shout you guys out, the homies, the listeners, the fans.
Self-care tip of the week,
where we give you guys some advice on how to take care of yourself.
Pay a hoe,
where we beg for money.
Fuck that.
Our current events segment.
Fuck it.
Our topic of the day. And today we're talking about the OGs of the Me Too movement.
Ayy.
Spoiler alert, they're all black women.
Of course.
Yeah, as per usual.
I'm rooting for everyone black. I'll say that every episode.
And then we got
Fuck Me,
which is the segment about our sexual, romantic, and dating lives.
And Fuck You,
which is the segment about your sexual, romantic, and dating lives.
So if you guys want to follow along with the conversation had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtags Inner Hole Uprising so we can see it, and the hashtag Pod In so other people can see it.
Mm-hmm. Do you like the kinds of things we say on this show?
And yeah, shit like that.
We fucking love it.
Would you want to hear those kinds of things live and in person at your school or conference or whatever the fuck?
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah. Yeah, I love you. Come to my school. Come to my school and show your tits. Well, don't do that, but like, talk. If you want to pay us to speak at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, or the other kinds of things we discuss on this here show, we would love to do so. So please, to book us, send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com, and we'll talk.
For sure.
Yeah, we'll figure something out. What's our first segment, boys?
Bay of the Week.
Who's your bae?
Well, we're doing something a little different for y'all.
Oh,
little spicy. We beaming it up, you know.
Real spicy.
We consistent out here. We said Black History Month. So, you know, my bae of the week happens to be a fantastic historical bae that not enough people know about. I actually learned about last semester, which is probably terrible. But at the same time, nah.
No, that's the,
you'd be surprised.
That's the United States public education.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Your fault.
It's not you.
And it's only
all.
Because I took a class specifically about Caribbean people's impact on America.
Yeah.
That's it. Never heard the name before.
In college.
It's a sad day.
Shirley Chisholm.
Yay, Shirley.
That's my attempt at the patriotic whatever music, but I don't know anything. I said anyway.
Okay. I saw an American flag waving.
I felt very patriotic, and that's the most I'll ever feel. Anyway. Shirley Chisholm. She's amazing. Anyway, she's the first African American to run for president.
That's pretty fucking cool. I think a lot of people think it's Al Sharpton.
They do.
Yeah.
But it's not. Mm-hmm. It's Shirley fucking Chisholm.
Al Sharpton ran for president?
Yeah.
When was what?
Or am I thinking about Jesse Jackson? Maybe they both did.
They probably Jesse all Jackson did it, but did just run. Weren't like successful enough for it to do a lot of media attention, I guess.
People do talk about Jesse Jackson's run.
Really?
Yeah.
You're better.
I feel like I've heard that.
Okay.
Maybe it wasn't Al Sharpton. I'm sorry.
You're Jesse like looking Jackson like, nah.
Ran for president.
Okay.
I don't know what Al Sharpton did. One time he told President Trump, you're racist. That's what's popping up.
That's enough. Yes. That's enough for me. That's enough.
In 2004.
Oh.
This nigga rent. Don't ever doubt me. Continue with Shirley Chisholm.
Maybe. Anyway. Well, she was born in Brooklyn. Brooklyn. Anyway. And she is Bajan.
I don't know what the fuck that was supposed to be.
I'm moving to Brooklyn. So, anyway, I'm fake. And now I'm
you're fake and you're officially a gentrifier, bitch. You're a fucking gentrifier.
I'm the worst kind of person. Too. Because I'm paying the community. I'm not changing anything. If anything, I'm adding to the aesthetic.
How is she?
I'm black as fuck.
Are you paying
a lot?
Oh, well, then you're a gentrifier, nigga.
But that's the rent that they proposed. Who's at fault here?
Fight it.
And I tried to haggle. We tried to haggle. We ain't black. We ain't white. We didn't go like, oh, well, that sounds delightful,
that
sir.
Sounds reasonable.
Nah, we was like, so you telling me you can't go down a couple, 50, 100? Of course we
feel
asked.
Like there's a larger conversation to be had about gentrification.
We'll
and
do
black
that.
Black people's role in gentrification, but this is not the show.
And
for
my
that.
Role, apparently.
Number one gentrifier. Gentrifier.
Well,
artisanal just some ass nigga.
Damn artisanal, like bread. I'm bread. So just some quick facts. If you don't know, she's Bajan and Guyanese.
That's cool.
She was a member of the League of Women's Voters and Bedford-Stuyvesant Political League. She became the second, there you go, second African-American woman to serve on the state legislature. She got it. I am tongue-tied.
Say it again.
Anyway, legislature. Legislature.
Oh, you actually just can't say that.
No, I can't. I have a slight lisp and it comes out in the worst times.
That's okay. It's pretty cute, actually.
It's terrible. Don't make fun of me. Everyone at home.
Who you the won't. Fuck is Shirley Chisholm? We are like 10 minutes into this episode.
She's also the first African-American woman elected into Congress, period. And she served 7 terms. And she's the first African-American to run for a major party and the first woman to vie for the Democratic nomination. And I just wanted y'all to know that.
That's dope as fuck. That's dope. What were, like, what was she running on? Like, what was she trying to do for America?
See, the thing is, the reason why I didn't really go into that is because she kind of was just like, I'm not for the black people. I'm also not for the women, but I'm for the American people. That's what she did. So it was like, but I guess she was just trying to like unify everybody, but everybody was against her. And that's why I didn't go that far.
It was like, last week it was Elmo. This week it's motherfucking Shirley Chisholm. All she your didn't, fans like, are probably... I kind of feel like in the space of running for president, like mm-hmm. how people expected so much from Barack Obama, like you're just not going to get that from the president of a country called America.
Yeah. And I mean, she was saying like, just don't look at me as only this party. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously she could have just been like, yo, but also black people are important too. But everybody, even like during her presidential race, like black people completely denounced her because they just felt like she wasn't going to win. So like, she's a mad woman and doing all that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was just like a really complicated.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but cool she did pave the way for a lot of like a lot of people in politics. Mm-hmm. Period.
Yay, Shirley Chisholm.
Whoop.
Cool. Who's your bae?
My bae of the week is Claudette Colvin, and she holds a very special place in my heart.
Aww.
Just because learning about her was one of those pivotal moments where you're like, these niggas lied to me, right?
And tell it.
It had hit me so hard that every Black History Month since, I'm just like, y'all gotta know about Claudette because they lied to us.
Yeah.
So Claudette Colvin is a pioneer of the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. She was 15 when she sat down on a white bus in Alabama. Maybe. Let me look that up. Alabama, haha. refused to get up, and that was 9 months before Rosa did it. Mm. She was not the face of the civil rights movement and the bus boycott because she was darker skinned. Mm-hmm. And she was young, and there are some speculation that she was pregnant, mm-hmm. but she was not pregnant at the time. She later became pregnant, still at a teenage year. Either way, they went with Rosa because Rosa was more palatable to the white folks. Mm-hmm. More of the black person that white people can have sympathy for. Mm-hmm. And in that Claudette never got the recognition that she deserved. But what's also not told is that, because the story always goes, Rose sat down, didn't get up, they had a boycott, stuff was desegregated later, the buses were desegregated later. What's not told is that Claudette was a part of the court case that ended up desegregating the buses in Alabama. It's Broder versus Gale. And she was one of the five plaintiffs, took it to the Supreme Court, and it was voted that it was unconstitutional to have the buses desegregated in Montgomery, Alabama. What's also not known is that she lives in New York.
Wait, she's alive?
Yes, and in the
Bronx. I did not know that. Wait, are we going to take a
trip? She's chilling out here?
Wait a minute.
I will take a trip to the Bronx for Claudette.
That's really what gets me. She's still alive. She's in the Bronx. She moved to New York afterwards.
She really is still alive.
Because she couldn't get work in Alabama. Shit was hard. She moved to New York. She's been here since.
Wow.
And don't... How...
Nah, I'm shook right now. 18, I'm dead. It's like, 20 wait.
Years of New York public education did not learn about a woman who did so much living a right. train, couple train stops
exactly.
away.
Exactly. In a New York City education. Exactly. That's so funny.
And that's why
Google, when you type in Claudette Colvin on Google, it's like people also ask, is Claudette Colvin still living? But the second one is, how old was Claudette Colvin when she died?
Oh.
She's not dead. She's not dead.
Oh.
Imagine Googling your own name like, damn, nigga, I'm really just still here. Like, I'm just watching The Price is Right today. You know that's what 78-year-olds get.
Of course.
Damn. Thank you for that. That opened my
but
eyes.
Yeah, I actually learned about her on Drunk History. Drunk History can be good sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, is it bad sometimes? Okay, I only watch the episodes that black people are on. So I really
yeah.
I guess you wouldn't know.
It's the other ones. It's the other ones where you're like,
I don't watch white people things ever.
Exactly.
So there you go.
I do, though, sometimes. It's a guilty pleasure.
Yeah. I like Jeopardy.
Jeopardy's great.
Ooh. Yeah. Alex Trebek. My historic bae of the week is Pauli Murray. Has anyone ever heard of Pauli Murray?
No, nope, but have we heard of anyone at this point?
History was not my
strong.
Good for you.
You know things.
I just be on the internet a lot. But Pauli Murray, she wrote this book called Proud Shoes. It was her autobiography, and I really loved it growing up, so that's why I knew her. But if I never read that, I would have never heard about her. But she was a both genderqueer and sex queer civil rights activist lawyer. And she just also looks good. And I would like for you to click that link that says Pics of Bae, because yes, she's my bae in what she does, but I also am, well, she's dead now, but I would be sexually attracted to Pauli Murray. But she was like one of the pioneers of the civil rights movement. And she also did Rosa before Rosa did Rosa, but she did Rosa 15 years before Rosa did Rosa.
Oh, she's cute.
And the, yes. But the NAACP didn't want to take the case and like pioneer with the case the same way that they did for other people, because Pauli Murray was found, like when that happened, she was sitting next to another woman on the bus who may or may not have been her partner.
Wow.
And then also she just like dressed very androgynous. Some people say today that if she was alive a little bit later, she might not have even identified as she. Like she could have been they or he or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Pauli Murray.
Hey.
That's a if you guys have historic bays of the week, share it with us, and we will post it on Twitter or Instagram.
Please do. We gotta share the knowledge.
Or Facebook. Let's go into our next segment, Hoe of the Week. Yeah, I'll just say it. This is a segment where we shout you guys out. So, who are some of these hoes this week? Who are these hoes?
Who are these hoes?
So Samantha G and Destiny are paid a bitch.
Woo! Woo! Samantha God. There because her name is Samantha as well. I guess not.
No, Samantha paid us. That's why she's there. They're there.
Thanks, Samantha.
And some new Patreon subscribers. Hey. Ali B. Hey. Brian. Hey. Luann A. Hey. Akeem.
Hey.
I don't want to butcher this.
Marusha.
Hey. J.
Hey.
Someone by the name of G.
That's hey. What, that's what.
Tawana S. and hey. Jessica M. All lit. Paid.
Oh, love
subscribe
y'all.
Subscribe to our Patreon.
One quick note about Destiny, and this is just because I have no idea how to contact Destiny in any other way, but Destiny said that they had an issue subscribing on Patreon, so if you could just send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com describing what the issue was, we'll try to fix it on our end. Just didn't know how to contact you. What's our next segment?
Self-care tip of the week.
So I put something in here, which I saw on Twitter, and I don't remember who posted it. I'm sorry. Oh, I saw it on somebody... an Afrofuturist Twitter. But basically, it was like, history is now, so document your ancestors. And I think that's really important. Like, we do have Snapchat and all that stuff, and we're documenting everything all the time, but we don't really put it on our parents. Mm-hmm. Or our parents, like, tell us these stories, and we're like, oh, here's nigga go again. He's telling me the same story for the 14th time. But, like, one day your folks are not going to be there, whether it be your relatives or your distant relatives or even people in your community who are, like, your maid family. So there are tons of ways to document the things that they're saying. You can record their voice. You can write stuff down. You can make family trees, because at some point you're going to forget and you're not going to know who your great-great-grandma was. Take pictures of pictures, because pictures are fragile and can be burnt or water damaged or whatever. So it's not really like a self-care thing, but just like for the sake of the community.
That's great. I mean,
in the future,
I never thought about what I always think about in terms of like digital age. Mm-hmm. And I'll make it quick. Is like, your kids are going to be able to like look on your Facebook, which, you know, soon, but like, it's going to be like whatever you posted and all those things, they're just like going to be able to look at it, as opposed to like your parents. It's just hearsay, or like that old dingy photo album that you pull out. Like, yes. Now it's just different. Everything moving forward, you should take advantage of the fact that everything is digital and can mm-hmm. be saved in some mm-hmm. ominous cloud somewhere. So
the cloud.
No one, I don't understand how it works. So it's evil. And that's pretty much what it is. But
several servers communicating back and forth.
But yeah, I never really even thought about like documenting everything, because it makes sense instead of just like what you're doing for the day and your lunch.
Yeah, because nobody cares about that. So I don't care about your avocado toast, nigga.
I actually had avocado toast for breakfast. Okay. I'm just kidding. That was a joke.
You are a gentle. Okay.
That was a joke. And I was waiting to see what Sam was going to say. The attack was immediate.
Get off my lawn. Anybody else have any self-care tips?
No.
Our next segment is a Pay-A-Ho. If you would like to help sustain the Inner Ho Uprising podcast, you can do so monetarily by going to innerhouprising.com, clicking the tab Pay-A-Ho. You can also go directly to paypal.me/innerho, and the same thing will pop up. You can also go to our website. You go back to our website, click the tab merchandise, and buy a cool hoodie or a t-shirt. You can use the sponsor codes used in not this or future or previous episodes, but at some point we had sponsors, and you can still use those codes, and that'll make them come back to us, because as you can see, we have no fucking sponsors right now. You can also now support a hoe on a monthly basis by subscribing to us on Patreon and receive perks while you're doing it. This is an easy way to throw some dollars monthly towards the show, because studios, transportation, and events ain't cheap, and as you can see, every episode isn't sponsored. If you're able and you'd be so kind, you can visit our Patreon, which is patreon.com/innerhouprising, and donate $2, which will give you access to private IHU gatherings like Rob's going away party, which is happening in 2 weeks.
Yes. Yep. February 23rd, ish. I believe.
Yeah.
Yes.
20-something.
And
if I'm wrong.
If you're on Patreon, you'll know. We're not on Patreon, so we don't know. And you will also receive our undying love and affection. And for the price of $5 a month, you can get all that, as well as access to some exclusive behind-the-scenes video content, perfect for people who want to see the uncut scenes from the live show and more, like this episode, for example. You can also donate less or more, so anything from $1 a month to $1 zillion a month. Anything is appreciated. This is just a more consistent way to pay a bitch, so it's pretty much spending what you would at a vending machine, but only once a month, and to help your favorite hoes. Or does anyone spend $5 at a vending machine?
I have.
If you get a water and two chips, that's $5. I don't know why Wong is shaking his head over there, because he lives off of bread and cheese.
I was about to say, that's what his diet consists of.
Let us go on to our next segment, which is
Fuck that.
This is our current events segment.
We like to switch it up, y'all, like I said earlier. So in this episode, we're only going to do one current event, because the main event is a little later. So
the main event is history.
Is history. Current. Exactly. Yeah. It is. Yeah. So we're just going to talk about one event, I think every episode, pretty much.
Yeah.
That's just history now. We were talking about creating history and moving it forward. So what's something groundbreaking that's happening today? So this week, Drag Race star to make history as a trans leading lady on Broadway.
Cool.
Yes. So what's unique about this? I watched RuPaul's Drag Race, but I haven't seen this season, so I don't actually know who she is. But Her name is Peppermint, and she is Broadway bound. She was one of the big, she made a big stir on the show because she was one of the few people to actually come out as transgender. Mm. It's a common misconception that if you're a drag queen, then you have gender identity issues or blah, 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 blah. It's stupid. Mm-hmm. But that's not always the case, obviously, mm-hmm. Because she was one of the people to make it something new and something groundbreaking. And she had once been quoted saying, "I've had people challenge me. I've heard people declare that transgender people can't be drag queens and drag queens are not trans." And that's certainly not true for many people. And it's, for me, it's not. Or for her, it's not. Mm-hmm. So the singer actress, who she is she's the runner up on the show's 9th season. A lot of people were, she was one of a lot of people's favorites. So they actually wanted her to win. But she is winning. She's going to Broadway, y'all.
Nice. Oh, but she didn't win that season?
No, she didn't. She was the runner-up.
Oh, gotcha.
But she's slated to star on Head Over Heels, which is billed as an unpredictable Elizabethan romp. The show is loosely based off of Philip Sidney's 16th century text, The Countess of Pembroke's Arcadia. And it features music by the Go-Go's. I pretty much, if you hear any...
we got the beat.
Yeah.
We got the beat. We got the beat. Yeah.
And then it's vacation all I ever wanted. Oh. Yeah, there you go. I was like one of them had to work. But yeah, it's like all those kind of like ABBA with Mamma Mia, like the whole yeah.
Or Across the Universe, which I actually
I fucking love Across the Universe.
I thought I was the only one.
Oh,
because people shit on that movie so hard, but I'm just like,
I don't care what anyone says.
Thank you.
Oh, it got me into the Beatles. I never even heard any like really listen to the Beatles before that, but nah, I was with it. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna name my son Jude. But anyway, I was thinking
that's
about
also a
it.
Haitian thing, though.
Yeah,
so it could have. There you go.
I could have got away with it. Who is squinting at us? Like, how dare y'all? It's a good movie. A lot of people shitted on it though. Yeah, but it is groundbreaking because she is one of the first trans performers to have a role specifically created for them on Broadway. There were, just because I don't want to like make it seem like she's the very first transgender openly, but for Broadway, she is the first. And that is why she's making history today.
Awesome. Is the character she's playing trans?
So it's kind of aloof. They're just giving information about the actual show, but they haven't revealed anything about it. They're probably trying to garner up hype. They haven't given anything about her actual character yet.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. I think it's awesome.
Nice.
And now I feel like I have to go back to RuPaul because I love that show. It's so dramatic.
It's time to lip sync for your life. That's the only thing I know about that show.
And it's great every time.
So let's go on to our next segment now. That's a party on the weekend. That's a party on the weekend. Fuck it. This is the topic of the day. And today we're talking about the OGs of the Me Too movement. So... y'all all know what the Me Too movement is, basically. We don't have to really get into that. But basically, the point of this conversation that we're about to have, we're going to recount some of the anti-rape activism that Black women have been doing for fucking centuries now at this point. Mm-hmm. But I want to start off by saying shout out to Tarana Burke, who is the actual founder of the Me Too movement.
Yes.
Even though people think that it was Alyssa Milano because she had used the hashtag. And Toronto's like kind of getting her just due that she deserves, but then she was also like left off of that Vogue cover where they were where they were talking about the Me Too movement, or what they call it, the Silence Breakers or something like that. I also didn't get why they changed the title, but yeah,
they're trying to whitewash
it. I was about to say probably because they knew they were full of shit.
Yeah, I mean, she was featured, but she just wasn't on the cover, which I just
should have been in the damn
Taylor
center.
Swift was on the cover.
Yeah,
exactly. It's just a slap in the face.
Yeah. Wait, was Kesha on that cover? Because I feel like of all the pop stars, it should have been Kesha instead of whatever. But I don't. It's weird hierarching people and like sexual assault cases, so whatever. I want to personally shout out, before we go into this, African-American studies professor at Princeton, Crystal Feimster, who was the source for a lot of my notes, and I based this on her piece, "What If I Am a Woman? Black Women's Campaigns for Sexual Justice and Citizenship." And Akua, you had a...
Oh, yes. I want to shout out Danielle L. McGuire. Most of my notes came from her 2004 article. It was like all of us had been raped. There's a part to that. Hold on, let me find the whole.
That is a rough
title.
That's
it grabs you, though. I'm like, wait,
is
what?
Is it like that?
Yeah. Like, huh? So her 2004 article, it was like, all of us had been raped. Sexual violence, community mobilization, and African-American freedom struggles. She then went on to write her book, which was published in 2010. And it was mainly about Recy Taylor and Rosa Parks' contribution to the anti-rape movement during civil rights. And it is titled, At the Dark End of the Street, Black Women, Rape, and Resistance.
Cool. So make sure, because we are not historians, but next week we're going to have on a fucking historian. Isn't that so cool?
Hey.
So excited. But yeah, so we're not historians, so we do encourage you to like take all of the things that you garner from this conversation and then go forth and learn new stuff and read those pieces. And then also I wanted to frame this conversation just in the fact that rape for Black women is much different from rape in terms of white women, or when it happens to white women, because, I mean, of course, there's patriarchy that says that men are supposed to take everything, sex being one of those things. But then there's also like this construct of misogynoir that says Black women are sexual creatures who can't be raped, because we always want it at all times, because we're so sexualized and we always want sex, but we particularly want sex from a white man because it's a white man. And then also within not just America, but I guess colonial violence, there's violence towards Black bodies, and a part of violence is rape. So we have that particular sexual violence towards Black female bodies. Mm-hmm. So I think those are all important things to understand going into this conversation. But let's kick it off with some of these people.
Trigger warning.
This whole episode.
This whole entire segment. Yes.
I figured I'd just say it and then you could just move it over.
No, we can just start it there.
All right.
That's fine. Yeah, so this whole entire section will have discussions on rape and sexual violence towards Black women. So if you would not like to hear that, you can skip forward to the time code that will be listed in the description for this episode. So the time is the early 1800s and slavery is rampant. I am not a good storyteller. That is not the way you
There's
start
a lot
that
of arms story. And it's like, end slavery. Okay.
That
why am
was
I
like,
doing the
You
arms?
Know when they show like antebellum South and that mist is there
yeah.
for some reason?
Yeah.
My arms
Always.
Are that mist.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I don't know why.
I'm there with you.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm there with you.
No. I was about to do something really bad. I was going to impersonate a racist.
Oh my God.
I was just going to yell out niggers. No, I was actually going to yell out niggers. Why did they used to say that? Isn't that so weird?
I'm so angry.
But why did they say that?
I don't know.
I've always wondered that. Anyway, so yeah, rape, I mean, violence against Black bodies was rampant, and rape against I'm not really sure about Black men's plight in this, honestly, because I didn't do enough research on it. I don't know to what extent Black men, or if they were being, like, sexually assaulted, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So take that with a grain of salt going forward, because we just don't have that information for this episode. But sexual violence against Black female bodies was also rampant. So the first, I guess, encounter of someone bringing that conversation up in terms of the entire abolitionist conversation was Maria W. Stewart. She was a teacher, journalist, abolitionist, lecturer, and women's rights advocate. She was the first known American to speak in front of a mixed crowd of people, which means both men and women, both white and Black, which is pretty cool. So her anti-rape activism started in 1931, and she began advocating for women's rights, particularly Black women's rights, and for abolition at the same time. So she published an essay in The Liberator, which was a popular abolitionist either magazine or newspaper at the time, calling out the specific ways that Black women were vulnerable to sexual violence. And she like did this speech called "What If I Am a Woman," kind of just like bringing Black women into the discussion. So if I am a woman, don't I deserve these kinds of things? Mm-hmm. Like autonomy over my own body. So just to give context, rape laws in the South at this time did not apply to any Black women. And that goes for both enslaved Black women and free Black women. Next person we can talk about. So we're going to get out of America and then we're going to go to the island. No, that's not a good way to frame that. The island
the
of
arms.
Bermuda.
Oh my God.
Take that out. So the next person we'll talk about is Mary Prince. Mary Prince wrote a slave narrative entitled The History of Mary Prince, a West Indian Slave. It was an autobiography. She was the first, I believe she was the first Black, and you can call me out if that's not true, but from what I've seen, she was the first Black woman to write a slave narrative in the UK. and potentially the world. But she wrote this in 1831. And this slave narrative told graphic stories of the physical and emotional abuse enslaved women dealt with at the hands of masters and mistresses. So she told this one story of like her mistress whipping her naked and making sure that she knew the difference between the kinds of whips that she was using on her or something like that. But the interesting, I mean, this is all interesting, but one particularly interesting thing about this story is that she had to write it within the realm of Victorian censorship. So you couldn't say things outright, like you couldn't say explicit sexual things. So she was such a skilled writer that she recounted these instances of sexual abuse, but saying it in like coded ways, mm-hmm. but the audience still understood. And that made people privy to the fact that Black enslaved women were being sexually abused. Like to describe how her master was like a nasty ass nigga, and not in the good way, she would say like he has no shame for his own flesh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was one of the first times that a narrative was set forth that Black women weren't creatures who always wanted it, because she's told it in a way where it was like, ugh, this nigga is like fucking disgusting me, not like, oh yeah, I yeah. wanted what he was putting on me. So another important slave narrative that did that same job was Harriet Jacobs' Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl, which at the time was published under a different name. She published it under a pseudonym. But she also heavily explored the topic of sexual harassment that enslaved women endured. Her story was that she was sold to her. Her mistress had died. Her mistress actually taught her how to read and write, which is how she was able to write this. But she died and she was willed to a sexual harasser named James Norcom.
She was willed to her mistress's niece, who was 3. And James Norcom was the father.
Or stepfather or something like that.
Yeah. He was a male.
Yeah.
Of that little niece.
Yeah. So that's how she came into this guy's ownership. And he was just really gross to her for years and years and years. And she recounted that. And she like went to... Something happened where she, I talked about this in Black Host Story Month, but she went to, she tried to get out of the situation. She married a different white guy and got out of the situation, but her kids were still enslaved.
She had babies with the white man, the white lawyer, mm-hmm. to try to get out of the situation, but the wouldn't let her go.
Yeah.
And then eventually, I think she ran away.
Yeah, she ran away and she was like... stuck, or she was hiding in an attic for like 8 years or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Because her kids lived in that
yeah,
house.
She was watching them, but just like living in the attic.
Holy shit.
Yeah, pretty crazy. But yeah, definitely check that out if you have the opportunity to. And then to get into some legalities of it, this might not be the first Black woman who did this, but one of the notable instances of an enslaved woman taking her rape by a master to court. Well, she didn't take it to court, but basically she killed her master after years of him raping her. And I think she tried to hide the body, but it was discovered or something like that. And that case was taken to court.
Who?
Her name is Celia. Sorry, Celia. And this happened in 1855. And I don't know what her last name was. And this happened in Missouri. So she wasn't allowed to speak because at that time, Black people weren't allowed to speak in court. But her defense was that she was raped. And it was... like, it was a revolutionary thing for her to say that because rape laws only applied to, like, human citizens. And mm-hmm. Black people and Black women weren't thought to be that. They lost the trial because if they had admitted that rape laws that apply to women apply to Black women, then that would say that Black women are people. And then that would say that slavery is unjust.
Mm-hmm. So, it wasn't the time for that yet, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. They lost. But just the fact that she said it and the fact that she applied that law to herself made, you know, like... minds open up mm-hmm. and ears open up to what was happening. Exactly.
What happened to Celia?
She was hung, I think. Damn. She was sentenced to death. Yeah.
R.I.P. Celia.
Yeah.
Not a lot of happy endings here, folks.
No,
but
not
it's
at
real
all.
Stories.
I mean, is the ending happy in 2018? Well, there is one happy. There's whatever. So
Sam's like, what is happy anyway?
Let's move past let's move past the early era of slavery and go to Beauregard. If you don't goddamn clean my musket, then I'm gonna fuck you up. We're going to the Civil War, and that was my very bad Civil War impression. I just figured if I said Beauregard and musket, then
you guys got it. Don't act like you didn't immediately get it. I got it.
Beauregard, I was with you. That's all. I had said Beauregard 15 times in a row, I'd be like, oh, it's the Civil War.
Like, duh. Like,
musket.
Obviously.
Oh, it's definitely the Civil War. Anyway, so in the age of Beauregard cleaning, something kind of happened. So at that time, as I said earlier, maybe I didn't say this, there were no laws in the South before 1861 protecting black women from rape whatsoever. But then new military laws were instituted under Lincoln's Labor Code of 1863 that brought all Southern black women under the umbrella of legal protection and defined rape as a war crime. And it had no regard for race. So if you were raping, it was a war crime and it wasn't a good thing to do. And it was something that you could be tried for. So the interesting thing about that was that, like, you would think, oh, the Southern white men are raping the black women because they're slave owners and they're racist. But also the Northern white men were raping assholes.
Of course.
And they also had this belief because, you know, the beliefs that the country has been indoctrinated about black people are widespread. They also had this belief that black women were unrapeable.
To I'm the just point like where, so fucking like keep going. But every time I fucking hear like black women were unrapeable, like
black women wanted it, they always wanted it. It's like,
I mean, that
they're
is pro like,
I'm sure it's there's like obvious signs that she does not want it,
yeah, like when it's happening,
yeah. I mean,
but that's like the whole thing, like they knew that everything that they were saying was a fucking lie. These are just the just like they knew that black people weren't savages when they fucking stole them from Africa. Like, you could see that people had advanced societies. You just fucked up. That was the guys that Northern white men were operating on. One, and I read this in that Crystal Feister article that I read, but so one Northern captain at the time said to his wife that his soldiers believed that no colored woman will deny gratification to a white man, especially if he's an officer. So they were just like, I'm horny, I'm going to rape black women because they want it. They'll never deny me. But of course, black women are rapeable because everyone is rapeable. And of course, rapes did occur. But because of this new Lincoln Labor Code, black women were able to like arm themselves with legal protections. So throughout the course of the Civil War, there are a documented 450 sexual crimes that were brought to the court. And according to Crystal Feister, many of them were brought to court by black women. One example is Harriet Elizabeth McKinley, who was raped by Private Perry Pearson of the 33rd Indiana Volunteer Infantry. And in a very brave fucking move, she testified not only in front of him, but in front of a commission that was all white and all male. And she was like recounting the details of it. And at some point, I guess the judge or something like that was like, and then what happened? Like, did he put his penis inside of you forcibly? And she was like, yes, sir, he did. And they believed her for once. And Pearson was actually found guilty of rape. Sadly, his punishment was to be put to hard labor for 1 year and deprived of pay for 4 months. So that's why I say it's like not really that happy.
So
of
he
a
was
story.
Paid for 6 months out of that year.
Yeah,
like, I just want to fight everybody.
He still got paid,
and I can't fight them because this is like decades.
They're dead. Yeah,
centuries.
You got to find his.
But like, see my face.
Find
my face
his
is like, who I
gotta
be
throw? Like, square up.
Yeah,
son. Square up, or more so, give me my fucking reparations.
Facts.
Honestly, I saw this one article. This is a tangent, but I saw this one. It was on Twitter. I think maybe Patrice Cullors is advocating for this. She's one of the founders of Black Lives Matter. That a part of our reparation should be like free therapy.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Because it's not always about like, oh, we just want the monetary. Nah, you fucked us up. Like,
completely. Like, it's about the monetary.
It is.
The mental.
I said, not
like,
only
everything.
Yeah. And it's just like, it like hearing new things every time as I've gotten older and like been disillusioned by everything, the more and more I hear like, just get over it. I'm like, are you guys fucking serious? Like, who's never. I'm never getting over anything ever.
Literally. Yeah. Especially if like no effort is being made by the people who did it to you. Yeah. You know? Like, if we're not getting any help and we're still, the foot is still on our neck.
Yeah.
How the fuck are we going to get over it?
Because yeah. even like seeing like, oh, he's been put to hard labor for 4 months and he'd been put to hard labor, whichever the fuck that is. I don't even know what that is. And he wasn't paid for four
was
months.
Was it slavery?
Like, yeah. And I'm like, so. You know what I mean?
It was not.
Like seeing like him get off is just like so much of a parallel of literally right today now. Of yeah. niggas who's just like straight up killing us.
Exactly.
And it's like, oh, we'll give you a pardon, but you didn't get paid for 2 weeks or some shit like that. Mm-hmm. It's like, what? Never mind.
It's I'm like, about to what my has rant. Changed?
Yeah. yeah. What has changed?
Yeah. Nothing.
Not a damn thing.
So after Beauregard cleaned his musket, damn, I don't even know. I don't know how to do this period.
I don't know how to impersonate this period. I see hillbillies when you say Beauregard and musket.
That's what hillbillies became, though. These are just the True. Descendants of those people who okay. got really
now
mad.
Now it's Beauregard!
Maybe I'm doing a Civil War. What do they do, those reenactments? I'm yeah. doing an impersonation of the Civil War reenactments instead of the actual Civil War. I'm sure it was a lot more serious than Beauregard cleaning his fucking musket. Whatever. I don't know how to do an impression for this, but after that happened, Reconstruction started because obviously after the Civil War ended, the Emancipation Proclamation was signed, slavery ended, and then there was just like mad black people in the South and not as many white people, and black people were like, okay, we're citizens now. We can have economic opportunities too. And white people were like, oh, we're fucked because not only was our free labor taken away from us, now we have mad competition. So because of this, white people did what white people do, and they were like, let's inflict terror upon these black people so they can get the fuck off our lawn. And that was kind of the scene for the Reconstruction era. So this is like when the rise of lynchings started happening. And the interesting thing about lynchings was that a lot of lynchings were done under the guise of a black man has raped a white woman, so that is okay for us to lynch him, but it was actually occurring because they wanted less competition mm-hmm. from black people, and oftentimes these rapes weren't even happening. It was just like literally crying rape, which is such a weird thing to talk about mm-hmm. like now in this day and age, especially when black men today actually do rape white women. It's like, oh, but there's such a weird history here of this. But yeah, so that is what the history was. And of course, it didn't stop. White men were still raping black women, and that was a part of this racial terror that they were inflicting upon black women. So one person who was very prominent during this era of Reconstruction and talking about the fact that this was just bullshit was Ida B. Wells. Ida B. Wells was a journalist, newspaper editor, suffragist, sociologist, feminist, although I don't think she actually called herself a feminist, mm-hmm. But she advocated for women's rights and the equality of men and women, and one of the founders of the fucking NAACP, but her name wasn't listed on like the original founders document, and apparently W.E.B. Du Bois didn't want her on there because they had beef. And he was being a fucking weird ass nigga about
what?
It. Yeah.
That's a fuckboy.
Ida B. Wells. So in 1892, she published a pamphlet called Southern Horrors, Lynch Law and All Its Phases, and basically examined accounts of lynchings under the guise of protecting white women from rape. She concluded that many of them were just being used as an excuse to halt black economic progress. And then in 1895, she published a pamphlet called that is a tongue twister, The Red Record, and it examined lynching since the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation. And of course, it went up since the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation because of all this white fear of black economic growth and success.
Isn't it interesting that after all the shit that happened?
Yeah.
Like, black people were just like, yo, let's grow now. They weren't even looking like...
They weren't even looking for beef. Like, held me down for 200 years. They were just like, okay, we'll contribute now.
And the first thing that happens is like, yo, they have to...
burn your shit.
It's just the craziest thing, you know? And I'm just like, we get this stigma of just being so angry. I'm like... clearly, we're not the angry ones here. You know what I mean? Like, we're just always trying to just build. And I'm like... ooh, sometimes I just be like, maybe we need to get angry.
That's exactly what I was thinking, though, honestly.
Because I'm tired now.
End of the world, and I'm scared for that.
I think that's just where we're going to head.
Okay.
I felt like this since George Zimmerman was acquitted. I was just like, oh, I don't have any faith anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But so in 1895, she published The Red Record, did I say that already?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but it also made the connection that the white men spreading the myth of the black male brute raping white women
were the actual people who had the power advantage to rape and take advantage of poor black women. These are probably the same people who were raping black women who are now spreading this myth. But that was really fucking important to make that connection because no one else was making that connection. I feel like even today that connection needs to be made, but it's lost. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so her work kind of did reach northern audiences, but ultimately she actually concluded that trying to like reason with these people was bullshit because obviously the economic interest of white people is always going to be put before the any kinds of interest of mm-hmm. any people, especially black people. So after that, she was just like, y'all niggas need to arm yourselves. And she was just like, everybody keep a Winchester in their homes to just like shoot people.
Did she become Sam? She was like, fuck it.
That is why this is Ida Baywell. Also during this time period, she created, so there was like this women's club movement, and that was mm-hmm. women fostering clubs to like for the suffragist movement. Mm-hmm. So white women were doing that. And then black women started black women's clubs, not only to advocate for the right to vote, but also to work against things like lynchings and rapes. And she set that foundation. But we're going to talk more about what was going on during the Reconstructionist movement. One of the fucked up acts of violence that was happening during the Reconstructionist era was the Memphis riots of 1866. Mm. And Aku is going to tell us a little bit more about that and the people who were advocating for no rape or speaking out against their rapes.
Mm-hmm. During that time, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the Memphis massacres were riots in which the white citizens and the police officers destroyed emancipated black communities in Memphis from May 1st to May 3rd. Just like Sam said, it was just a part of this campaign of terror against black people who wanted nothing but to build and economic opportunities mm-hmm. and probably began because there is also a history of white people attacking prominent economic communities that black people build. Mm-hmm. So just continuing in that fashion or the beginning of that fashion. Mm-hmm. In this massacre, 46 people died, 285 people were injured, and over 100 black houses and properties were burned down to the ground. Mm-hmm. And that brings us to Frances Thompson, who was a former slave, a disabled woman, and possibly the first transgender woman to testify before a congressional committee in the United States. Unfortunately, she had to testify about her rape at the hands of 7 white men during the Memphis massacre. In her account, she stated that she was forced to cook dinner for them. So they came, they broke down her door, came in her house and said, yo, make us some food at gunpoint. So, of course, she brought them some food and then she was raped and beaten until she was bedridden. She had a roommate, Lucy Smith, who was a teenager, 16 at the time, who was only raped by one man because they had beaten her to nearly an inch of her life. And the other men were like, nah, we don't want to touch that, but continue to beat her anyway.
Oh, God.
5 other black women also stood in their activism and said, me too. Mm-hmm. And testified before the congressional committee that was investigating this massacre. And they were Rebecca Ann Bloom, Lucy Tibbs, and Harriet Armour.
So just to be clear, 5 black women were raped during the Memphis massacre. Yes. And these were the other 3 women.
No, 5 in total. These were the other 3 women. Mm-hmm. These were the 5 that testified. I cannot say they were the only 5 raped.
Okay.
They were the
when only. I was looking, I saw that 5 black women were raped, but I guess more people could have been raped mm-hmm. and they didn't like
come forward.
These are the only women that testified.
Yeah, gotcha. Oh, but what came of that?
Nothing as far as I know.
God dang. So from what I know, God dang. You watching a movie?
I know.
Felt a little harsh.
Yeah, that was through. Harsh.
So they testified, and as a response, Congress did. I don't know if these men were actually sentenced to anything, but Congress said something. Mm. They were validated, and they said something along the lines of like 7 fiends in human shape committed mm-hmm. like an act of an atrocity or something like that. So they denounced them, which was like
a big ass deal at the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
but yeah, that I mean, that was fucking brave as shit. To yes. do that after these people ransacked your community and you realize that your community really has no protection, to then go on a public platform like here, you could really fucking be killed by these people who attacked you after speaking out about it. So we have the 3rd Harriet of the
Harriet's out here, yo.
Ooh, back in this time period, Harriet was the name to have, yo, apparently.
You were going to be somebody if your name was Harriet at that time.
I mean, but everyone named Harriet that I know of are doing, like, courageous ass shit, so.
There you go.
We had Harriet Simrel. Mm-hmm. And she also testified in front of a congressional committee that was investigating the KKK terrorism in South Carolina. And Harriet testified that she was raped by 8 men who broke into her home to force her husband into joining the Democratic ticket.
Which was like the reverse at the time.
Yes.
The Democrats were the bad people and the Republicans were the good people, to say it simply.
I'm not sure. When I Googled her name, nothing came up. Which happened a lot during this research, yeah. And it just disheartened me. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what came of, you know, that investigation. Probably nothing. But yes, Harriet was like, "Nope, I'm telling y'all what happened," and she did. Wow. She spoke out.
That is brave. Whew. Scary times. This Reconstructionist era.
Scary times now.
Scary times this entire
human history.
Sometimes when I think about things like this, though, like, I'm just like, this shit was real. Like, I don't know if I would be able to have survived for any of this stuff, to be the type of person to stand up and just do it. You know what I mean? These are people
that straight up changed history and did shit. Mm-hmm. In the face of death, like,
that's why I hate that meme where it was like, oh, this is not your grandparents' party, like, we'll fuck you up, like, but are you fucking anybody up? Because these people were really fucking people up.
Yep.
I don't know,
man.
I guess those social clubs built by Ida B. Wells takes us into the future. I don't have a good 1940s beep, impression.
Beep. Oh, damn. Too far into the future.
We are literally not even that far into the future. Was that just an impression of the Jetsons?
I just thought you would. Thought you were doing the future sound. And
beep, boop, boop. Beep, boop, beep. Give me a 1940 sound. Because I have that 1920s impression in my head.
1940s.
Where I was like, the sex robots are coming.
Yeah, the sex robots are coming. See?
I don't know what 44 sounds like. I don't know either. I kind of like.
What happened in the 40s?
40s to 60s, I'm just like, ooh.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
So I was like, I didn't want to live during that era.
I don't know.
I guess the 50s would be like, jump and jiving. When you really want to jump and jive.
What is this?
We're trying to soundscape this episode, Akua. Okay.
We're adding textures and layers.
Exactly.
And beauty.
Which calls for a good podcast, I might say. If you don't have soundscapes, you're fucking failing at a podcast.
We're feeling.
It's the 1940s. Let's talk about it.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
All right. So the 1940s bring us to Recy Taylor. Now, I am more than positive that things happened and occurred in this time space between.
Definitely.
1860.
There was probably just like more rape going on. I don't know why it's not documented.
Because the erasure of Black women's history is so real.
Mm-hmm, true.
That even in trying to find this information, it was just like these blanket phrases. African-American women fought against anti-rape. Who were they?
Who were they?
I was
seeing
that
too.
Give me names.
Yeah, I was seeing that a lot too.
And it was
even hard for me to find much on Ida B. Wells past the fact that she was talking about the fact that lynchings were like unjust because, oh, Black men were being stigmatized for being brutes. But it also, like, I know that that led to anti-rape activism, but I couldn't find much on what she
you
was actually
had to
doing.
Dig
yeah.
To get to that. Mm-hmm. And it was like, well, Rosa ties into this, but it was like when Oprah talked about this, when Recy Taylor died in December of 2017. We'll go back there. There were a lot of articles about her really titled Recy Taylor, the catalyst of the anti-rape movement during the civil rights era, but never told us what happened after the catalyst. So it was like, I need more documentation of what was happening in this anti-rape movement during this era. And it was a lot of talk about Rosa Parks being a sex activist before then. But besides Recy Taylor, there is no documents of the other women she helped. So not to say she was an activist, but again, you're not giving me the information that's there. If she was doing this long line of work before the bus boycott, where is it? Tell me what it is. So we're going to Recy Taylor. Recy Taylor was a 24-year-old mother, wife, and she worked as a sharecropper in Abbeville, Alabama. She was walking home from church and was abducted by at gunpoint and raped by 6 men. The abduction was reported by her friend who she was walking with, who had ran away, was able to get away. When Reese was dropped back into town by her abductors, she had to then recount the events to her father, her husband, and the police. The police investigated, found the driver of the car, and fined him $250.
Under what? Wait, was that for the rape?
Yes, really.
What the fuck? Did we say this is 1944?
This was 1944. So that was really what it was. It was like, oh, you were driving the car. She was in it. You said you picked her up. This is your charge, $250.
Hold on. That's it? Get the fuck out of here. Are you serious?
So then...
oh, my God.
This is not that long ago, people. This is recent history, honestly.
This is literally worse. 10 years before my mom was born.
Yeah.
It gets worse. This was really like 11 years before my mom was born.
Yes.
So she began to receive death threats for speaking out against the men and going to police. Her house was firebombed the day after the assault, and she was forced to move back in with her parents. And there was just a lot of national coverage on it. And then here comes in Rosa, who created the Committee for Equal Justice for Mrs. Reese Taylor. It was created by Rosa and 2 other men, but we ain't hear about the men, so it was created by Rosa. as a response to the outrage that was rising in the Black community, because the Black people was like, nah, this is not okay. This is a respectable, there are air quotes, woman. She's a mother. She did nothing. Mm-hmm. And y'all gonna let this man go scot-free. So Black people were just up in arms.
That's interesting, because then what about the women who weren't respectable?
I was thinking
mad
that too.
People like, who are like not talked about.
There's exactly. You know, respectability politics is a thing. Mm-hmm. It was a big thing. Mm-hmm. So the committee was created to force an investigation, continue this uproar to get justice. But none of the assailants were arrested, though the guy, the driver of the car, when he was arrested, he had named the people who had raped her. Mm. But none of those people were arrested. And because they were not arrested, and Reese didn't have their name, she was unable to identify them. Mm-hmm. To say these are the people, John Smith Baker and whoever the hell else. Mm-hmm. So when it came time, there was a trial, a bullshit of a trial. When it came time, she was unable to name her attackers. The juries deliberated for like 5 minutes and were like, no, we're not pressing charges because there's no one to indict. So then Black people still got angry, because this is what we do. Mm-hmm. We get angry. Mm-hmm.
They need to be.
Rightfully so.
And that anger forced the Alabama governor to launch an investigation again. Things happened. Yeah, they launched an investigation again. Another trial happened, but the all-white jury refused to indict the assailants, even though they testified that one, they interacted with her, had sex with her, were out there looking for women to rape and things like that. What? They were just like, nah.
That doesn't even make any sense.
Come on.
Does any of this make sense?
You're right.
They, when they arrested this, I don't know, I think I may be mixing up stories, but I know they testified to being interacting with her with that night, having sex with her that night, and being out looking for women to harm. And they were just like, well.
Under what, though? Like, don't juries have to say things?
No.
Not really. They just have to, they have to all reach a consensus.
But then afterwards, don't you have to say why they definitely say why they come to the,
no.
That's I'm right. sure it was bullshit in this case, but like they do say it.
And I'm when? Sure it was bullshit.
Or maybe, the judge sums it
yeah.
up. So what the fuck did he say?
He was just like,
somebody says something. Like, I've seen enough how to get away with murder.
Case and the jury was just unable to come to a consensus. As long as one person without probable cause or whatever,
that's true, yeah.
It doesn't matter. Could be that one dude who was there, like, a broski. Or just, like, all of them are racist.
You're not supposed to know anybody on the fucking who's being tried, though.
But there, it's not even about, like, knowing them. It's, like,
it was identify with them.
Yes, yeah. It was really saying if we convict these white men of raping this Black woman and say that's an atrocity, then we have to continue saying that for everything.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Precedent, so far yeah. and everything that will happen. Mm-hmm. And they were not about to do that mm-hmm. with their white selves. Mm-hmm. So Mrs. Taylor continued to receive threats for 20 years, still living in Alabama. Then she moved to Florida and then was moved back to Alabama in her old age. She finally received an apology from Alabama legislators in 2011.
Did they give cash with that shit?
They were just like, we sorry, man. Our sincerest sympathies and regrets for the lack of justice. There were other words behind that, but I remember those two are sincerest sympathies and regrets. I was like, sis, sympathies and regrets does not help me.
Why am I asking for that shit?
That does not help her. And again, she died in 2011. Oh, 2017. Good God. Damn. Just December
20th. So weird that like nobody was talking about it before she died. What was the launching pad for people talking about it? Oprah?
No. Because I had saved a story on it before Oprah. Mm-hmm. She died. That was the launching pad.
Oh, okay.
She had died.
Some historians and it was just like, started. Yeah. Oh, okay.
5 years later, because it continues, mm-hmm. we have Gertrude Perkins, who was abducted by the police and raped. Two policemen.
It's a nothing new there.
No. She went directly to the reverend of her church, who documented everything she said, had it notarized, and then had a journalist friend put it on the radio first thing in the morning.
Wow.
So it was like the first thing white people were hearing the next morning when they woke up.
I was
like, do it.
Facts. Exactly.
You gonna hear this.
I fuck with that.
They found two white lawyers, of course, to take up her case. And of course, you need to file a warrant for arrest, mm-hmm. to arrest people. Mm-hmm. But of course, because this was one of their own, the police were like, nah, we're not giving names. So you can't file no arrest.
Oh, God.
So then Rosa came in. Rosa. These are the only two women that I had documented of Rosa helping in her sex activism. Mm-hmm. She formed the Citizens Committee for Gertrude Perkins. I love the name that the names of these committees. Like, this is for this woman,
yeah.
Right here. And although the community mobilized, she had the church, she had the black community behind her, a grand jury still failed to indict the assailant.
I just hear the silence after every fucking thing because we're just getting more and more frustrated. Like, there's nothing we could do about it because it's, like, several years ago, but it's just, like, everyone just gets quiet afterwards.
Because you're still angry. See it today.
Yeah.
Like, there was a lot of accounts of women being abused and assaulted by the police, and I was like, well, God damn. And that...
But it really just still be like that, though, honestly. Yeah. And it only gets attention when it is a, like, respectable woman. Like, mm-hmm. the person who... What was that guy's name? The half-Asian one? He was big. He used to play football. Officer rapes black women.
I'm about to say, do you know how many hits you're about to get?
No, I got Daniel Holtzclaw because he was the only fucking person who was ever convicted of it.
I was thinking that. He was Asian?
He was half-Asian. The only reason why he was actually convicted was because he sexually assaulted at a stop a black middle-class, yes. middle-aged mm-hmm. woman. But he had raped so many other people before that, and they were often like sex workers and young and impoverished. Mm-hmm. So no one had ever said anything. And this is like happening right fucking now. It has to be.
Yes. Sorry, I must continue.
Yeah, you got a couple more.
So here comes.
We can do
justice.
Some soundscapes if you want. Oh, okay. Just da 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 da.
Justice. In the form of this unfortunate case of Betty J. Owens. And Betty was a black college student attending FAMU, Florida A&M University. Mm-hmm. She was abducted and raped at gunpoint by four white men after attending a school ball on May 2nd, 1959. Knife and gunpoint. I'm sorry. Oh, they had shit. A knife and a gun. They had a shotgun.
Jeez.
So she was, quick background, I don't like to lengthen the description of this, but she was in a vehicle with two men and another female. They were leaving the ball or whatever. The white men approached, said, get out the car, and made the black men kneel in front of the car, and then tried to take the two women, Betty and the other woman. The other woman ran, mm-hmm. I believe, and got away. So now they had Betty and they drove off. The other woman ran to the police, who then this is the one time the police acted.
Oh, okay. I was already, I had my mind made up.
Police were like, no, we need to go find this girl. Got out, started searching for the car. There was a little car chase, a manhunt and a car chase.
Wow.
And they found Betty gagged and bound on the floor of the car.
The
fuck is wrong with these niggas?
All the men, while arrested, confessed to raping her, to abducting her, raping her.
Isn't that interesting to cut you off? Like, how they always, like, outwardly just say what they did? Because there's they think it's okay.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I raped that nigga.
In this account, there was a lot of articles that were like, they thought they were going to get away with it.
Yeah.
They were laughing. They thought the arrest was a joke. You know, they were just going to be let out in the morning, go home to their white ass daddies and be chilling.
Wow.
Here comes black students. I love me some black students.
Yeah.
The students at FAMU heard about it and took to the streets. They were not with the shits. They had signs. A group of students planned an armed march to kind of mirror the reaction of white men when white women are raped by black men. It's like, so we're out here with our torches and our guns and we ready to lynch, so we about to do it too.
Fucks with it. Who fucks with it?
Other ones were like, no, we must be peaceful. No, we must be peaceful.
Why? Because you cannot fight hate with hate, exactly. Young Padawan.
Exactly. But nonetheless, their protest took shape in many forms. Mm-hmm. It lasted for like 3 days. It got national media attention. They had signs. There were thousands of students in the streets. Like, they were playing no games.
Wow.
And as a response to that, a special grand jury was convened. And then the assailants who had said they did it pleaded not guilty. And niggas was like, what? But okay. So it went to do it. That means it has to go to a jury trial. And Betty was forced to testify in front of 400 people, 200 black people filled them courthouses. They was about to figure out what was about to happen.
Family.
She had to testify in front of 400 people. Knowing that her assailants, and recount what happened to her, knowing that her assailants could go free at the end, like, to speak about what happened to you and people violating you in front of all these people, in front of all your family, and knowing that these people can just walk away at the end. So she testified. Of course, the defense tried to come after her character, tried to say, oh, you wasn't a virgin, oh, you went with them freely, all types of stuff. But she was like, nah, I'm not answering none of those questions about my virginity. Fuck you. This is what they did to me. You gonna hear this. I resisted all efforts to shame her. She was like, these people did this to me. I'm about to stand in my truth and tell y'all. And y'all best to do the right thing. And the jury did. They found them guilty. Nice. All four men, all guilty. And that they were up for, I believe, the death penalty.
Wow.
But they were convicted guilty with a recommendation for mercy, which took the death penalty off the table. And all four men got life in prison.
Who recommended that fucking mercy?
The all-white jury.
When these niggas came in the fucking precinct talking about, yeah, we did it. Yeah, we did it.
What was crazy in reading this was that in 1965, one of the men was paroled. We're not going to say his name because he don't get no clout over here. One of the men was paroled. And 4 years after he was released, he tracked down another woman named Betty Jane something and killed her. Thinking it was Betty Owens.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, see, that's the problem right there.
Exactly. What?
That
I'm
is,
still reading. What do you even have to do to get parole? For that.
It's a demonstration of character.
Yeah, so like, just stick to yourself.
So did he become an anti-rape advocate? Because that's the only, I can't
that
quite.
That would be like the compensation for that. Like, but no, just like, stick to yourself, keep your head down, don't cause no trouble in jail. And after like a quarter of your sentence, you're up for parole. And
that is disgusting.
That's what he did. But what came out of that was that once...
And also, what a dumb nigga. It's not even the same name, you idiot. What the fuck?
He be like, she black and her name Betty Jean. That's all I need.
What a fucking idiot.
Like, what came out of that? Betty Owens got her justice. That was one of the first instances of white men being convicted for the rape of a black woman in the history of Florida.
In what, 1944?
1959.
Yes. Yesterday.
Seriously.
Literally.
This is when parents were born. This is when people's
listening's
parents
were born. My mom was born a year before that.
Like, literally.
Yesterday.
The same year, unfortunately, we have Mary Ruth Reed, who was raped and beaten by a white man while 8 months pregnant. Her attack was witnessed by her neighbors. She received support from the NAACP. What was fucked up about this was that Mary, of course, went to trial, stood in her truth and was like, this man did this to me and he needs to pay. And during the trial, they brought in the man's wife, who was a white woman, and to discredit Mary and was basically like, he has a pure white woman at home. Why would he want to touch her? And the jury agreed. And this white man was let go, though there were people, neighbors, who witnessed him attack this pregnant woman.
Wow. This is draining me, yo.
Yeah, this is getting bad.
It is. It was draining just doing all of mm-hmm. this. And what was crazy was that Mary was mentioned in Danielle's article, but when I Googled her name, that nothing came up on her on Google. Like I went to the third page.
That's how you know.
I was like, are y'all serious?
I looked up the guy who found the other person and killed her. Mm-hmm. And I still won't say his name. But like, he comes up as a registered sex offender and all that stuff. And then for crime description, it says sexual battery unspecified. Like, that's it?
Nah, specify that shit.
Exactly. Like,
he killed someone.
Well, I think the adjudication date is the date of Betty Jean Owens.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
But still, sexual battery unspecified. He's dead, though, so yay.
Yay.
Yeah.
I think all of them.
I am disgusted.
I think all of them died.
Good.
Yes. Burning in hell. The seventh circle of hell.
Oh, God.
Should I go on to the last one?
Yeah.
It's hard being a person who has, like, a lot of, like, empathy, so I'm just like imagining it. I'm just like, I feel so fucking terrible.
Yeah.
It's just so terrible
to have to like
live through it.
Yeah,
like these were people, everyone.
I don't want to say lastly because it sure does not end with her. Mm-hmm. We have Fannie
the last
Lou
account that we have.
We have Fannie Lou Hamer. Or Hamer, and she was a women's rights activist, a voting rights activist, and one of the leaders of the civil rights movement. She, unfortunately, like we've just recounted, came from a long legacy of sexual assault. Her grandmother was enslaved and frequently spoke about the sexual assault that occurred in slavery, as Sam has told us. Mm-hmm. And her grandmother had 20 children out of 23 children, which 20 were the product of rape by her master and his peers.
God.
Fannie Lou knew that growing up. She heard those stories from her grandma, her mother, went on to be an activist for women's rights and all the other stuff going on. And her Me Too moment was basically she was arrested, as she frequently was, for always being insubordinate and saying, no, fuck you. And I'm not sure which one of these assaults, because when I was researching it, they whitewash the sexual aspects of everything out of history, like mm-hmm. literally. So there was just an account of her being viciously attacked by police, but I'm not sure when that happened or if that was the same instance in which she was talking about. But she was being beaten and groped by Winona, Mississippi Police Department after she was arrested for trying to desegregate a restaurant. Basically, she was like, they were beating me on my head and my hands and my feet, and I was trying to cover myself, and they kept lifting up my dress and were feeling underneath me. And, you know, I was just trying to keep my dignity by holding down my dress as they beat me. I was like, this is 1964.
My parents were officially born. My dad was born at this time.
And she told that story at the Democratic National Convention in 1964.
Yes.
Like, in front of all those people. And in telling that story, I couldn't have found any account of it.
You couldn't find any account of her telling that?
Yeah.
Oh, the actual story, yeah.
So, like, she said this at a national convention that's, like, televised. And nobody wrote that part down.
Man, oh man. You know, maybe somebody did write it down, but like it's not, nobody uploaded it anywhere or something like that, which is why I just feel like we need more Black women historians to like dig. I'm sure there is a lot of lost history because shit just wasn't written down and stuff like that, but yeah.
black women historians.
That stuff makes me sad because I'm just like, now that person's just gone. And there's just like no way to recount.
Yeah. Document your ancestors, guys.
Yes.
The good and the bad in their life, honestly. I had this bit here about what happened afterwards, but we can just stop. It was about rape crisis centers and the fact that they were like being established by black women and women of color around the 1970s. Okay, I guess I'll go talk about it a little bit. Only like, for two more sentences. But yeah, so after it started to gain traction, of course, middle-class white women became involved, and then there was like a power struggle and the movement, like white women became the face of the rape crisis centers. And then I don't know what happened after that, honestly, in terms of, it seems like they're still the face of rape crisis centers. So yeah,
it became a lot about rape and domestic violence and like marriages and stuff, protection of children and sexual abuse of children, things like that, and kind of just took the wind out of or erased the black women and the sexual violence that we face,
which is like so much even more so because we have racialized sexual violence, and then we're more likely to be economically disenfranchised, so we have sex workers who go into sex work because they're disenfranchised, and then they get sexually assaulted and raped. And then we just have regular good old domestic violence. Like, it's just levels to this.
Good old.
So the point of this episode was not to bring you down, but
it was to educate you.
Yeah, galvanize and to shed light on.
That was great. That was a good word.
Thank you.
I'm so impressed right now.
To shed light on the things that I had to dig today to find this information. And that shouldn't be the case. It should be a simple Google search. Literally a simple Google search. There's no reason why I was on regular Google. I was like, I had to switch to academia because I can't get the stuff I need. I had to get into that St. John's Library, get them e-periodicals popping to get information because Google was not working. And that is a problem.
That is
a whole problem. Bad enough that we're not teaching this in schools. Like, I heard about Ida B. Wells in schools, and she was just a woman fighting for voting rights and anti-lynching, but never, you know, the parallels of sexual violence against women and the lynching that happened against black men. And it was like, that, sure, not third grade, but 12th grade, I can learn about that.
Oh, definitely. Like, definitely.
I should not have to wait till college and then have to take an African-American studies class.
Yeah, I shouldn't have to pay for this.
Like, to hear about history, American history, like, that's a problem.
Yeah.
So these women are the OG Me Toos.
OG Me Too.
And now you know.
Hashtag. That's pretty cool. That's a cool thing, the hashtag for Black History Month.
And I am more than proud and grateful for these women to stand up in their truth and be like, no, this is not okay. And I'm going to tell this for justice. Even if it was for their personal justice, you standing up in your truth is activism as well.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. These are our ancestors, guys.
Yeah.
These are our foremothers.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, thanks for listening to the first installment of Black History Month.
And, you know, we didn't,
I'm like, that's not the name of it.
The first installment of Black History Month. This is the whole month.
First ever Black History Month.
We created this month. I hope you like it, girl. That's it.
Go forth with it. Tell other people.
Does it sound like a good idea? Maybe put it on your calendar. I don't know.
I got this idea I'm trying to pitch. The month of February. We only talk about black people. What a concept.
What do you think?
Yeah. First installment of our Black History Month and Inner Hoa Uprising series.
Yes.
Hope you enjoyed.
Let us know what you think.
Yeah, we're going to skip our last two segments because we're trying to do shorter episodes now.
If you know about other black women, comment them.
Yes. Yeah.
So let's spread the knowledge so that we don't have to do this every year.
Hashtag OG Me Too.
Yeah. And if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so on Inner Hoa Uprising without the G on Twitter, Inner Hoa Uprising on Instagram and Facebook, innerhoauprising.com to pay a bitch or to check out merchandise. And where can they follow you, Sam?
Why are you just going to put me on the spot?
Yes, I am.
I don't know how to say it after. I don't know how to say it first.
Oh my gosh.
You guys can follow me at Hey, a Cool Girl, H-E-Y-Y. H-E-Y-A-K-U-H-E-I-R-L on Twitter and Snapchat and Instagram.
And you can follow me at Rebby or Not on Instagram and Twitter and No Need to Make Believe on Tumblr.
and save the best for last, bitches. That's why I actually did that.
This hoe.
Slam Rid on Instagram and Twitter. All of that will be in the description for this episode. Don't forget to rate us 5 stars on iTunes and Stitcher, please.
Bye.